All right, welcome to Wrestling with Reality. It is me, John Wangland, here. Joining me, as always, is my partner in crime, Mr. Brother Martin. Brother Martin, how you doing over there, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. I am just sitting back, relaxing with like my wife, my kids tonight. And, you know, it's just like a nice, peaceful night. And we have a wonderful guest with us tonight. But, John, brother, you are the MC, and you're going to take care of everything. So,
well, I got to give him the right introduction. Give him the right introduction, and it always makes me feel good when I can give a good introduction to somebody, that special guest that we have on the show. And this gentleman is not only a father, he's not only a husband, he's not only a pastor, he's not only an ex-professional wrestler, he's not only a vigilante, he's an all-around great guy, he's an author, he's got some amazing books that he's been putting out, and his story, which is so cool, got made into a movie. I mean, how many people can say that their story of their life got helped, you know, make a big movie like The Saint there? I mean, legends like Roddy Piper in there. It's just such an awesome story. And we got Dr. Pastor Chris Whaley, the Masked Saint himself. How are you doing today, sir?
Man, I am doing absolutely fantastic. I am highly favored and blessed.
Hey, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. We're all here. It's a special day today, and we are so lucky to have you on the show. I'll tell you, for everybody out there, if you haven't seen The Masked Saint yet, go check the movie out. You can find it on Tubi. You can find it all over the internet. You got to check The Masked Saint out. We're going to be talking about that a lot here. But The Masked Saint story, the movie, let's be real here, because I was just talking with Chris off the air about this. This was a book. And this is Chris's story that was made into a movie. And I'm more partial to the books, which I'm looking forward to reading the book of this. And I'm way more partial usually to books just because I'm a guy that likes to read. But this movie is something that will touch your heart. It will hit you from a bunch of different angles. There's so many amazing things in it. But before we get into that movie, The Masked Saint, Mr. Chris, how did you get into professional wrestling? Because that's the question we kind of always kind of start everybody off with here on, you know, Wrestling with Reality when we bring interviews on. How did you get started into professional wrestling?
Well, I know this sounds kind of fairy tale-ish, but I was a real sickly kid growing up. I was constantly in and out of the hospital from the time I was in the second grade. When I was in the fourth grade, I had polio and viral encephalitis at the same time. And I was in the hospital for 3 months. And I had a great doctor. He was a godly man. And he refused to let me give up. You know, I had to learn how to walk all over again. And he was the guy that encouraged me to go to the gym, to lift weights, to, the cardio, the whole works. I started doing that. But when you're in the hospital, there's not a lot on TV.
Yep.
And you get your days and your nights mixed up. And as a little boy, I loved professional wrestling. And we had the greatest wrestling in the world here in Florida, Championship Wrestling from Florida. And I
absolutely
saw Dusty Rhodes and Eddie Graham, the great Malenko, who ended up training me. And as a kid, I couldn't get enough of it. And then, they found out one of the problems that I had was I was allergic to everything. I had almost 200 allergies, and they put me on the allergy medication, and I started building up an immune system, and then I started putting on weight and started getting in pretty good shape. And my wife and I, after graduating from college and going up to Kentucky for a year, we came back, and my wife was teaching school at her alma mater, and I was working for a company, and looking for a job as a youth pastor. And I was looking at the paper one day, and there was an ad in there, and it said wanted professional wrestlers. And I took it over to my wife. I was so excited. I said, look at this. And she was grading papers. And she looked at it, and she just went, and then kept grading paper. I went in, I got a bag and I got some, you know, some shorts and t-shirt and some shoes. And I said, I'm going to Tampa. And I went over to Tampa and I went in and there was, you know, the great Malenko. He was the guy who had the gym and he was training people. And so, you know, I trained with him for about 6 months and I was hooked from the moment I walked into the gym. And my first match was against a grappler, and I just never got enough of it.
The grappler, Len Denton?
I don't even remember his name, but
there you go.
It was so long ago, but he was a great worker, great guy, and that was my introduction to professional wrestling. Matter of fact, I broke my nose in the first match.
Wow!
Yeah, good, great introduction. So, I got hooked on it in 1978, and I had the opportunity to wrestle from 1978 to 1988, 10 years. And I graduated from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas in May of 1988. And then I went to my first church. And so that's when my wrestling career ended.
It's an amazing story. Like, you know, just how did your wife take it? Like, I know you said she's kind of was like, what the heck is going on here? When you were out on the road there trying to make that dream happen, because you had a really good career. You were in with some real legends of the ring, you know, the likes of the Ultimate Warrior, the Undertaker. You were in world-class championship wrestling with the Von Erichs. I mean, let's be real. That's a who's who of wrestling right there. But it had to have been a lot of time for you and a lot of, you know, maybe time away from your family. How did your wife take it, you know, when you were first getting started in the business?
Well, no, my family came first.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, there was a lot of extracurricular activities after the matches, and I didn't fit into that group. And so, I didn't neglect my family when I got into wrestling. So that's a good thing. And I, you know, I'm very, very blessed. My wife and I, this Sunday, will celebrate 46 years of
beautiful
marriage.
Congratulations.
And we have two wonderful godly daughters. Our oldest daughter is 41, and she is she's been married for 18 years to her college sweetheart, and they live in Melbourne. They have four kids, and my youngest daughter lives in the same city we do, and she's 39, and she has two children, and she's married to a godly man. So I'm just really blessed on the family end and very thankful for their support through the years.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Now, did you always know, you know, even when you were wrestling, that you wanted to go to the seminary and that you wanted to become a pastor, that you wanted to devote your life towards that, that was more of your mission? Did you always know that?
No, actually, I ran from it. 1984, we were living in our dream home in Lakeland, Florida on a lake. And we were, you know, driving, you know, two new cars, and we did just about anything we wanted to do, but we were part of a great church there in Lakeland, and about 30 young couples our age with children took a trip up to North Georgia and camped on the side of a mountain. And I had really been running from God. I mean, God called me into the ministry, and I became a youth pastor, but I had a terrible experience and got out, and I was just bitter, and I was running from God, and he had to get my attention. So we were on that camping trip when one day that week we went whitewater river rafting down the Chattooga River, where that movie Deliverance was filmed.
Awesome.
So I had a life and death experience on that river. I got thrown into the rapids, and the hydraulics of the water sucked me down.
Ooh.
And I was just on the bottom of the river, and I was looking up, and, you know, the raft was above me. I could see people sticking paddles down trying to get me up, and I could not move. It was just as if God placed me there and got my attention, because the one thing that was on my mind is I'm going to die and I'm going to go and stand before God and I'm going to tell him why I didn't do what he called me to do. And, you know, I took water in. The next thing I know, they were getting the water out of my lungs on the raft. And when we came back, we used to walk in the evening with our little girls around a lake there in Lakeland. And I told my wife, I said, I gotta do what God's called me to do. And she said, I've just been waiting for you to tell me that. And she said, I know you've been running. And so anyway, we packed up, you know, everything we owned and moved to Fort Worth to go to Southwestern Seminary. And so the last 3 years were those 3 years in Texas. And those were the three of the greatest years in wrestling for me. Had the opportunity to work for, you know, world class. And also Wild West Wrestling, Ken Mantell ran that. And to work against some of the greatest guys in the business. It was a great 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. What an amazing story. I mean, it's fascinating to hear. You know, I really want to talk about the spirituality component and religion here throughout the show, just because it's so important to all of us in our lives that are here on the show, myself and Chris and Mike, who set up the interview with you for us. You know, Mike's a great guy, too. You know, it's a big component of our lives, because I think we all at points run from what our true destiny and our true calling is. And when we accept what we are meant to do, that's when you see, I think, life, you know, start to really come together for you. And that's when you can really feel the beauty of your life and the beauty of the, you know, the grace of God and just all those amazing things. That's how I feel about it, you know, with a lot of things, because we run so much from what we're destined to do. And stop running out there, folks. You know, if you got a dream and you got a goal, if you got something out there, go do it. You know, and I mean, Chris is, you know, he's walking proof that when you follow your path, it turned out to be an amazing life. You know, as you said, 46 years of marriage, two beautiful kids. How can you beat that right there, Chris? Right? Yep.
Right.
Yep, absolutely. Well, the wrestling side of it with World Class Championship Wrestling, Chris, I got to ask you, because I'm a huge World Class Championship Wrestling fan. The Von Erichs are some of my favorites of all time, and I'm fascinated by a lot of it. What was it like working in World Class Championship Wrestling with the Von Erich family, that atmosphere? What was that like for you?
Oh, it was pretty surreal, you know. In those days, of course, you know, that was a territory, and there were, I think, three territories in Texas. You know, the Funks were in West Texas, and Putski was in South Texas, and the Von Erichs in East Texas. And I can remember going on a trip with my dad when I was a little boy, and we stayed in Dallas, and it happened to be the night they were wrestling at the Sportatorium. So as a little boy, I got to sit in the Sportatorium and watch Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes work against Fritz Von Erich and forget who his partner was. You know, as a little boy, so to go back and have an opportunity to go to the Sportatorium there, it was just kind of dreamlike, and to, you know, to be around some of those guys. There was when I went there, I called Larry, the great Malenko. I called him, and he told me to talk to Bronco Lubitsch. Bronco Lubitsch worked in the office, and he was also, you know, a referee, and he was a great wrestler in his day. And so that was my introduction of talking with Bronco, and he was a great guy. And you know, I think Vince got most of his talent from Fritz. You know, because we had some of the greatest talent in the world there, and just an awesome place. Texas people are great, and Texas people love wrestling.
They do.
Oh, yep. Most definitely.
Yeah.
What was Fritz Von Erich like, Chris? You know, I was always just Fritz. Just One of my favorite matches in all of wrestling, which I'd love to do a watch along one day on the show here of it, is the Fabulous Freebirds versus the Von Erichs. And it's a come as you are street fight that they did. And I believe it was done in the Sportatorium. And it was Fritz's big match when he came out of retirement there. And my gosh, the crowd when the Von Erichs music Stranglehold by Ted Nugent would hit. And when Fritz would come out, that place was electric. And when he nailed Michael P.S. Hayes in there and was just beating him down and getting, you know, some comeuppance for his kids and his family, that place just erupted. What was Fritz Von Erich like?
You know, I didn't have the opportunity to get to know him well, because it was really at the very end of his career. But, you know, I got to spend time with Kerry and Kevin, and, you know, they had a lot of tragedy in their life right before I got there. David died in Japan. They had another little brother that died when he was very little. And I think about 9 years old. And then Michael died while I was there. And it was just a lot of tragedy. And I know that it was a lot of hurt in that family. But, you know, anybody who talked to Fritz, they better, you know, do it with a lot of respect. And, you know, they better look at who they're talking to, because he was one of the biggest names in the business and one of the best. So he just really, I'm trying to think of the word, he garnered that respect.
Yeah.
From anybody that was around him.
Yep.
And of course, my goodness, you know, what a life he had, and to have, you know, three of his kids to go up the ranks, and even, you know, I think Kerry got the belt for a little while from Ric Flair.
Yep.
But, you know, you just, in Texas, there was the Cowboys, you know, the Dallas Cowboys. But I think sometimes the Von Erich were on the same plane with the Cowboys, because everybody knew the Von Erichs. Everybody.
You know, and I don't think a lot of the younger fans will maybe understand how over the Von Erichs were. You know, you were there at, you know, like you said at the end, and you were there for several years. Just maybe if you could just briefly explain what it was like when the Von Erichs came out in that Sportatorium in World Class Championship Wrestling, because for me, they looked like they were the biggest thing since sliced bread. Like they were the Hulk Hogan of that spot right there in Texas. That's who they were. What was it like though, from a firsthand experience?
Well, you know, how many people, you know, Kerry was supposed to work a show and he was late. He called the sheriff's department. I think it was the sheriff's department, told him who he was and that he needed to get there. They gave him a police escort with all the bells and whistles going and at a very rapid high speed to get him to the auditorium. There's not a lot of people in any state that can garner that kind of, you know, when you need to get somewhere and have the sheriff's department do something like that. So that tells you how big they were. And when they walked out of the dressing room and on their way to the ring, they were mobbed.
Yeah. By everybody. Yep.
And, they could not, you know, they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't go anywhere without being mobbed. So,
yeah. Must have been a really crazy and surreal thing to see. Now I have to ask, how did you come up with the character of the Masked Saint? What brought that about? I know your faith and everything, I'm sure, was a big part of it, but what brought about the Masked Saint? How did you come up with that character?
Actually, I worked under the name of the Saint, not the Masked Saint.
Yep.
I worked under the Saint. And the way that you remember I told you I was a youth pastor, and,
yep,
and I got to tell you, Chris, I was the world's worst youth pastor.
Really?
Oh yeah. Youth ministry is a calling, and it was,
yes,
it was not my calling. And
oh,
I was not a good youth pastor, but anyway, We were in this large county seat church, and my wife was pregnant with our first child, and she was not born until August the 22nd, which school is starting, and she couldn't go back to school. So, you know, she wasn't getting paid. In those days, you didn't get paid if you didn't work. And so she wasn't getting paid. So I talked to the pastor. I said, you know, I could wrestle a couple of nights a week, and it would really help our family financially because, Chris, you know, they pay youth ministers so well, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's why you see me working at Wally World. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, you know, the pastor was not one of my favorite in the ministry. And he said, no way. We're not going to turn this church into a circus. And he said, we're not going to do that. And so I was kind of disappointed, but it was a Saturday. I was sitting in my living room and professional wrestling was on. And a friend of mine was working, and he was working under a hood or a mask, you know. And so the light went on. I said, that's it. That's what I can do. And so I changed my gimmick. You know, my sister, who was a great seamstress, actually made my first mask. And then, you know, I called K&H Wrestling in Youngstown, Ohio, and I ordered white trunks and white tights and white boots. And my sister made me a cape. And so I started wrestling as the Saint, and nobody knew who I was.
There it is.
And it was kind of neat though, you know, because I would go, I'd go to church and I'd have a broken nose with black eyes, and I'd go with bumps and bruises, and they always asked me what happened, and I told them I fell down, which is, you know, I did not lie, but I had a lot of help falling down. So,
yeah.
So that's how the Saint was born. The Mass Saint is, you know, in my book.
Yep.
And the book is closer to my life than the movie. And no, that's the old Mass Saint book.
Yep. I found that. I figured you'd get a kick out of that. I found that online and I saw that. I was like, that's the old cover right there. I like that though. I think it's cool.
Yeah, that's yep. New. Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, if you read the book, you find out how the Mass Saint came about.
I can't wait to check it out because, like I told you earlier, I'm a huge, you know, buff for reading and everything. And it's just something I just, you know, I'm really looking forward to checking it out. I'm just finishing right now. I'm reading an autobiography actually on Tito Santana, which is a fantastic read there from him. And I'm just finishing that up right now for, you know, my wrestling reading stuff that I like to do because we are the biggest marks for wrestling over here on the show. And we only do retro content, Chris, because it's just our favorite eras of professional wrestling and just learning. You know, all about it and everything. Now, how did the movie come about? You write the book. How did this whole process, crazy process to get a movie started about, you know, your story? Because, you know, let me preface this for people. When you watch the movie, it's based on true events. It's the character's name in there is Chris Samuels. Right. And there's things that, you know, are relatable, but it's, you know, accentuated for a movie, right, Chris?
All right.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote the book, and my sister, who lives about 40 minutes from me, she worked in the Orange County school system, and she got to know a family there, and the lady's husband was a movie producer. He, matter of fact, he was the executive producer for the first three Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. And then he was the producer of the Bobby Jones story, Stroke of Genius, with Jim Caviezel.
Okay.
And then he did a faith-based movie called Letters to God. And so my sister gave the copy of my book to his wife, and she gave it to him. And then I got a call from him, and he asked me to come to his office in downtown Orlando. And they had a script written, and it looked like he was going to do it. And then all of a sudden, he just you know, backed out and cut out. But in the meantime, I had the opportunity to get to know some other people in the business. And the guy who wrote the first screenplay, a great guy named Troy Schmidt, Troy introduced me to another movie producer. And matter of fact, we talked by phone, and then he was in Toronto, and he flew down here and met me at Disney World. And he was very interested in the book and making it into a movie. And we talked for a long time, and then he backed out. And I was so sick of all of this, you know, the stress related to this, that I was ready to just put the book on a shelf, and one day my grandkids could take it off and say, "Hey, look what grandpa did." I was through with it. And one day I'm on my way to the gym, I'm driving, and my phone rang, and I answered it. And he said, it was the producer in Canada. And he said, "Has anybody done anything with your book?" And I said, "No." And I kind of rolled my eyes because I'm on the phone. I went, "No." And he said, "Okay." He said, "Well, I'll get back to you." And I said, "Yeah, right. Okay. Bye." And 2 weeks later, I'm driving, and he called me. He said, "You got a few minutes?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "As a matter of fact, I am. I'm driving." He said, "We're gonna make your book into a movie," and I almost soiled myself. I said, "Are you kidding me?" And he said, "No, I'm not kidding you." And they did. You know, they started working on a screenplay. They had planned to film the movie in July, so that they could say everything took place in Florida, because it did. But the screenplay was not finished until October. And so they started filming the movie the 1st of November of 2013. And they filmed it in Sault Ste. Marie, Canada. And there was snow on the ground, so they couldn't say it took place in Florida. So they made up a fictitious name in Michigan.
Yeah.
I never pastored in Michigan, so I didn't.
Gotcha. Now, one of the funniest parts of the beginning of the movie, and I'm not going to spoil the movie for anybody out there, you have to go watch it for yourself. So I'm not going to give it too many details, but there was one part in it that I loved, and it was when he was learning really how to pastor, you know, when Chris Samuels in there was learning how to pastor, and he gets right up there, he's in the pulpit, he's ready to go, and he just blanks. He just goes and just starts talking just out of his butt a little bit on there. And then every week it turns into that every sermon he does is about faith. And the, you know, the people start, they're just going crazy. They're like, "I can't hear about faith anymore." Was that for the movie? Was that something that was just made up, or did that happen to you when you started pastoring at all?
No, you know, I have the opportunity to go to churches. Just a couple of weeks ago, a church invited me. They show the movie, and then afterwards I speak. And one of the things that I have to say when I get up there is I was never, ever that bad. And also, my choir was never that bad.
Yeah, so, they were bad.
Absolutely. It was done for humor's sake for the movie. Because, I'm a good preacher. I'm not a bad preacher. So
hey, I thought it was hilarious in there. Yeah. What were some of the maybe a couple of the similarities for those who have seen a movie that can understand this? What were some of the real similarities that they brought out in the movie that were really, you know, stuff that happened to you, you know, in depth a little bit? Was there any real big parts of the movie that, you know, was a real big depiction of your life?
You know, the match with the Reaper when he broke my leg, that it wasn't the Reaper who did that. It was another wrestler. But, you know, that actually took place. I've got a nice scar for that one. And, you know, there were Miss Edna was a big part of my life when I was growing up as a little boy. And in the book, just about, you know, each chapter of the book has a lesson that I learned from Miss Edna as a little boy growing up. And of course, for the movie, they they made her real time in the movie instead of from my childhood. Diane Carroll did a great job of playing Miss Edna. But of course, Diane Carroll passed away, I think, last year. And she was a she was just a real precious lady. I really enjoyed getting to know her and getting a hug from her every now and then. That was pretty cool. But there's, you know, a lot of the things that they changed in the movie. The thing that takes place on the basketball court actually takes place on a softball field.
Okay.
But, you know, it was 20 degrees and windy outside. So they couldn't do a softball game, so they turned it into a basketball game. But that actually happened with Judd. And then the robbery that takes place in the movie, that actually took place in a service plaza on the turnpike here in Florida. And it was, you know, it was different, but they kind of dramatized that for the movie. But the book tells the real story on that. And just, you know, a lot of the stuff that they brought about was very good and, you know, spot on. And then, of course, they had to change some things for the movie.
Yep. Now, Rowdy Piper was in there. Of course, all wrestling fans have to know who Rowdy Piper is. The guy is amazing. He was in this film. I believe it was his last film that he was in, Chris. I'm not 100% positive, but I believe it was his last film that he was ever in. How was Rowdy Piper meeting him? And maybe you had met him before, but how was it working with him on this movie?
It was absolutely awesome. I'd worked against him about 25 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I said, "Now I know you won't remember me." And he, "Oh, brother, I remember you! Yeah." You know, he didn't remember me. I know he didn't. But you know, Roddy was one of the best in the business as far as professional wrestling. But he was a great actor, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, his movie "They Live" that's a kind of a cult favorite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Roddy's a great actor. He was a class guy. I don't know if you saw the biography on A&E on Sunday night.
Not yet. Not yet. I planned it on it this week.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did a great job on that. And you know, Roddy wanted to be home with his family as much as possible. Another thing a lot of people don't know, if you watch any of his matches, you'll notice he's always got his wedding ring on. He never took his wedding ring off.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Yeah, when he worked, but he just a class guy. If you get a copy of the movie, there are some behind the scenes stuff, and there's a great interview with Rowdy Piper. And he talks about, you know, making the movie and all. Just super, super good.
That's awesome. It really is a great movie for everybody to go check out. You know, no doubt about it. It's a must watch for not just wrestling fans, but people of faith or people that maybe need to find something in their life with a purpose. You worked for many, many years, and you're still doing it now, going around speaking at churches. Are you still an active pastor, Chris?
You know, I have the opportunity to speak, and I'm enjoying that. Up until COVID last year, I was on staff at First Baptist Church of Orlando, or as we affectionately call it, Baptist World here in Orlando. You know, you got Disney World, you got SeaWorld, and you got Baptist World. It's a huge church with 20,000 members, you know.
Wow.
But I served there for about 5 years. Matter of fact, my youngest daughter is still on staff there. She is she's one of the worship leaders at First Baptist Orlando. She has a beautiful voice like her mother, and she's a beautiful girl. So when COVID hit, they had to let a lot of, you know, people go. And I think most of the old guys like me. So. But it gave me more time to do some other things, and I'm enjoying that. Matter of fact, coming up in May, I'm going to be doing a three-part series with a pastor here in the area. We're calling it Russell Rama.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's 3 weeks, and it has a wrestling flavor to it, and we're going to be, you know, preaching on passages like, Ephesians 6:12, and Jacob's wrestling match with God. That's one of the passages, and also I'm looking forward to that. I'm getting some of my wrestling buddies to do some commercials for us, you know, about WrestleMania, so that's going to be pretty cool, too.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Chris, is there anything that you would like to ask Mr. Whaley? Chris, anything you want to throw in there, buddy? I'm hogging the conversation. I'm sorry, Chris. I'm fascinated, you know, by your story. It's just I love it. It really just warmed my heart, the whole thing. Chris, but I'm going to turn it over to you.
Mr. Whaley, we know that you are a strong man of faith. Now, when it comes like to wrestling and the men and women that you were you associated with, who would you say was the biggest spiritual influence on you, wrestler wise, someone that you could go to while you were on the road that like you could talk to, that could, that you can confide in, that someone wouldn't realize?
It's a lot different today. You know, there's a lot of guys that have faith in their life today, you know, like Ted DiBiase, I think Tully Blanchard,
Sting.
I heard the Undertaker is a believer now.
Yep. But
they didn't have that when I was in wrestling. I think I felt like I was the only one.
Wow.
But I became very good friends with Tom Jones. Tom was one of the very first black wrestlers, and Tom ran the gym in the stockyards. He also wrestled as Mr. Ebony, and he worked under a mask and as Mr. Ebony. And Tom was a believer, and he was that guy for me. You know, we loved going to his house, loved having him and his family come to our house. And, you know, he went to church with us. That was a great thing. Solomon Grundy is a guy from, this guy became a megastar in Mexico. When I left Texas, he was there for a little while longer, but then he went to Mexico, and he wrestled in Mexico for 12 years with Mil Mascaras, with Vampiro and all of the Mexican greats. And Grundy was a great guy too. Grundy was one of those guys that would have your back. He's a great guy. You could YouTube him or Googling. He was 465 pounds.
Wow.
Whoa, big boy.
Yeah, big boy. For a guy that size, he could do drop kicks, hit you right in the chest. He could do bumps off the ropes. He was amazing. And he was also a great friend during that time too.
That's awesome. It's, you know, it's crazy to hear that people, you know, didn't really have that in their lives. But I think, what's your thoughts on today, you know, with today's society, the way that things are going, you know, what are your thoughts on it now? Because it's like, for believers and for Christians and for religion, it's like you get ostracized almost now. And we've had that happen with us many times, Chris, you know, where people think you're awful because you're a believer in God, or that people, you know, think that you are supposed to be perfect because you're a believer in God, and they knock people who believe in God and that faith is part of their life. You know, what's your thoughts on things that are kind of going on in society now with, you know, in the context of religion and spirituality?
Well, I don't know if you're going to pull the plug on me now.
Nope, not at all. Go right ahead.
Or whoever's listening might pull the plug, but I've been very sad since November the 3rd of last year, because of, the change in our world. I never thought I would ever see a day where, you know, an unborn baby would become a political issue. I never thought I would ever see a time where the life of an innocent child, they would say, is a choice. I never thought that I would see a time where, you know, there was, I believe the biggest problems with race today is caused by the media and politicians. They're causing the majority of the problems in our country today is caused by the mainstream media and the politicians on the left. So it makes me very sad, but, you know, in my book, there, you know, the thing that I got from Miss Edna is the quote from Edmund Burke is the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And so, you know, I'm going to do anything and everything. I don't back down from my faith. If people got a problem with it, you know, that's their problem. But I have much right in this country to talk about my faith as they have a right to talk about all the crap that they talk about. You know?
Yep. I
agree.
Very great points right there. Really, really good points.
And just really quick, sir, and like you hit the nail right on the head, which in my opinion, because if you can have scientists stating that there is life on Mars and we should be very protective when it comes to that, something that frustrates me is they claim that, but they claim that at conception life doesn't start, which in my opinion, that's bull crap. Straight up, once conception starts, life begins. So if the same goes for life on Mars, when it comes like to plants and bacteria, the same should apply for children here on Earth. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, which I don't mean to get too political about it, but yeah, I fully agree with you, sir.
Hey, man, you're preaching to the choir, man. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting times, you know, that are going on nowadays. And it really saddens me to see the divide in our country. And like you said, with the media and things that are just going on with that, it's a huge part of it. And I really just hope and pray that as a society, I end the show every week when I do it, Chris, as I say, be good to yourselves. Most importantly, be good to one another, because it's something that we're just lacking nowadays. And we all fall short, you know, out there for everybody that's watching this right now or listening to this. We all fall short sometimes. And that happens in life, in my opinion. But we need to learn from our shortcomings and the mistakes that we make. And we need to embrace them, understand them, and try to correct them. And if we just brought some of these basic morals and fundamental values back, I really think we could get back on track. Some people tell me I'm crazy, Chris, for saying that, but I really do. If we brought some of these fundamental morals and values, I really think we could get back on track. That's my opinion, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you study the history of this nation, our nation was founded on Christian principles.
Amen.
You know, it's just amazing for me. Go to Washington, D.C. and read the national monuments and read what's on those. I mean, God is mentioned just about, you know, every other line. And some of the Christian here, I think like 50, I don't know how many of the original signers of the Declaration of Independence were, you know, people of faith. And, you know, we have allowed it to happen. I think Christians carry a lot of the weight and responsibility for the reason our country is the way it is. People who do not hold politicians accountable, who do not, you know, vote their Christian beliefs when they go into the booth. You know, a lot of it's our own fault because we have allowed it. I mean, we allowed one woman to take prayer out of school, you know, Madeline Murray O'Hare. You know, where were all the men when that happened? You know, I mean, I was a little boy, And I would like to hope and pray and believe that if I were a man, I would have stood up and said, this is not right. But we don't have enough people that are standing up today saying that's not right.
You're right, sir. And something which you were right on the money with that, and which in my opinion, and some people might think like the three of us, like we're nuts, but how ironic is it that the moment that God slowly starts taking his hand right off our nation, and that like you get prayer, which it's removed from school, school shootings go up. I mean, like the violence, it is unreal. I mean, there's so many terrible things happening, which in my opinion, God, he's stepping back, letting these things happen because he wants us to wake up and say, hey guys, I mean, let me take the wheel again. Let me take over. Let me be that guide for you to bring this nation back to glory. And it's just, it's so mind-boggling because everybody thinks that they have the answers when in fact they don't look to the one that made them, you know? Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm the chaplain for Seminole County Fire Department. I've been the chaplain for Seminole County Fire Department for 14 years. And I love those guys and girls. You know, anybody that'll run into a burning building to save people they don't know, they're just incredible people. But they deal with tragedy quite a bit. And then when they do, I get called in to go and sit down. And three or four weeks ago, I'm coming home from Jacksonville with my wife, and I got a call from one of the battalion chiefs. There was a motorcycle and car incident where motorcycle versus car, and of course the car won. And they called one of our stations. The rescue went there, and they were, you know, trying to help this guy, and people were gathered around. Well, the guy in the car came back to finish the job. And we came back and he killed two more people and then ran over the guy that was on the motorcycle, and just pure evil. And you go to a station, you know, and you deal with that with these guys, and they always ask the question. They always say, Chaplain, why would God allow something like this to happen? Why would God let this happen? And I always tell them, you know, I say, hey, listen, God created a perfect world. He created a perfect garden. He put a perfect man and a perfect woman in that garden, and they chose to sin. And when they chose to sin, when sin came into the world, it brought with it death. It brought with it tragedy. It brought with it sickness and all the evil that we see in our world today. It came through the fallen nature of man. And, you know, here's the thing. We have gradually kicked God out of our government. We have kicked God out of our public schools. We have kicked God out of every place that we possibly can. And then we expect God to do something. You know, God's a gentleman. He's not going to go where he's not wanted. And I think God has backed away and said, you know, this is what you want. You know, you got it. But I agree with you, Chris. I believe, you know, if this nation gets on its knees and calls out to God once more, I believe that Second Chronicles 7:14, you know, is going to come to life.
Great points. Really fascinating discussion, and just great points that, you know, that you both make there with everything. And I really hope that we can get on that right track and get back to where we need to be, because we really can do it, folks. Really start getting those things back in your life, like God. Start getting that faith in your life. Start getting that goodness back in you. Spread it out. It's contagious.
Yeah.
But it really is. It's a contagious thing. Now, you have another book that recently came out right here, and it's Harold's Heavenly Christmas. Can you tell us a little bit about this book, Chris?
Yeah. You know, when you write a book and it's made into a movie, it kind of spoils you. And I was thinking, you know, what would have the best chance of being made into a movie, a second one. And my wife and I, we love the Hallmark movies, you know, yep. The Christmas movies.
Oh, they're great.
We're kind of hooked on those. And so I had an idea for a Christmas book. And the whole point was, I'm going to write this and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to hawk it to Hallmark. So at nice. The present time, it has about a 75% possibility of being made into a Hallmark movie, because it's better. This is better than anything you'll see on Hallmark. And so we're talking to the people in Los Angeles, and matter of fact, the same producer of The Masked Saint is working on this. And so I think within the next couple of weeks, we'll have a good idea if it's going to be made into a Hallmark movie. But it's just a great feel-good story. Starts off kind of sad. You know, a lot of bad things happen to that young man in the book. And then there's a firefighter who dies and goes to heaven, and they use him to help these people on earth. And, you know, it's not biblical. It's just a good story. And I don't think there's anything wrong with just good moral stories. And so it's just a good moral story. It's a good feel good. It's got a great ending to it. And I know I'm biased, but I'll tell you, it's better than anything Hallmark has on right now.
I can see how proud you are talking about it with the smile and just how proud you are. And that's awesome. And I really hope it does get made into that for you. And I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah. Did you like It's a Wonderful Life?
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, God, yes. Well, Harold is the new Clarence.
Oh, okay.
Right. Oh.
Yeah. Harold is the new Clarence.
Okay. Well, Harold's Heavenly Christmas is out there too, folks. I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to getting both of these, checking them out, and giving them both a read because, man, Harold's Heavenly Christmas sounds awesome. And I know the book is probably 100 times better than the movie, which that's, you know, going to be hard because it's a great movie. But I can't wait to read them both, Chris. And anything like for anybody, if they ever want to reach out to you in any way, anything you'd like to put out there for appearances you might be doing or anything you'd like to plug right now?
Yeah, the best thing to do is just follow me on Facebook. They can, you know, just go to Chris Whaley on Facebook. And I usually tip, you know, people. I have about 5,000 friends, and I don't think you can friend anybody after 5,000. But on a daily basis, I'll have at least, you know, 30 people get ticked at me and unfriend me. So they can friend me on Facebook and keep up with me that way. You can send me an email. My email is easy. It's The Masked Saint, just like the book, The Masked Saint, M-A-S-K-E-D, 5-9, The Masked Saint, 5-9, at gmail.com. So yep. Send me that. And I always answer them.
Yep.
I answer anybody who, you know, contacts me on Facebook. Obviously, you guys contacted me.
Yep. Yep.
And I responded to you. So this is like the... It's amazing. You know, that movie came out in January 2016, and here it is, 21, and I'm doing this interview. I did two last week, so I still get requests. It's amazing that people still, you know, are interested in The Masked Saint, still watch it, and still read the book.
Well, it's because it's a great story, and it's just a great depiction of so many things, and I think it's one of those things, you know, for people, When you see it, you're going to get a lot out of it. There's a lot of lessons in life to everything that Chris was talking about here today that I'm sure is in the book for the same stuff and for the movie. There's just a lot of lessons in life. It's something I really suggest for anybody out there to go check out. You know, it's about an hour and 45 minutes or so, and it just cooks by. It's a fantastic flick, and there's no excuse not to check it out because you can find it right on the internet for free on Tubi right now. And I believe it's been on Netflix at one point too. I know it's not on there now, but it's definitely right out there and available to everybody out there. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, so. it was on Netflix from June of 2016 until June of 2019. They've been on there for 3 years and all. Hey, let me tell you one quick story that is in the book. that is not in the movie. That was the night that I wrestled The Undertaker.
Yes, Big Mike wanted me to ask you this, so I was going to ask you this before we headed off. I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, I was working in Dallas, and I had already worked my match, and it was a Friday night. And when it was Friday, my girls were real little then, and my wife and girls would come to the match, and then afterwards we'd go out and do Friday night fun night. And on this particular night, you know, I worked my match, I'm in the dressing room, I'm taking my boots off, and the promoter came in and said, need somebody to work against Mark. The guy that was going to work against him didn't show. And I raised my hand. I said, I'll do it, you know. And so had to get the referee to go out and find my girls and to tell them, you know, that I was going to wrestle one more time. And so they didn't know who I was going to wrestle. And so I got into the ring, and, you know, the lights went down. I found my girls. I found them. They're right there, you know. And the lights went down, and that hideous music came on, and, you know, Mark walked through, and I found my girl. Both my little girls were crying when they saw him. And my wife's eyes got real big, and she was, and then real quickly she reached over and grabbed her purse and started going through her purse. And anyway, the match started. Had a great match, went about 20 minutes, and I won't tell you who won. That's not important. But it was a great match. Well, after, you know, that night, we're driving back to Fort Worth, and I look in the rearview mirror. Both my girls are asleep in the back seat, and I looked over at my wife and I said, "Hey, right before the match started, I noticed you grabbed your purse and you were going through it like crazy. What were you doing?" And she thought for a moment. And she said, "Oh," she said, "I was looking for the checkbook to make sure you'd paid the insurance."
Oh wow!
Oh man!
Yeah, that's in the book too. Yeah, you want to meet my wife?
Yeah.
What was that, Chris?
You want to meet my wife?
Oh, I would love to. It'd be an honor.
Yeah. Come here. She'd come over here. Yeah, here she is. This is Verna.
Greetings, ma'am. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Oh, so so wonderful. Thank you for letting us take your husband away for the last hour. We so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you too.
Oh, God bless, ma'am. Thank you.
All right.
See you.
Oh, I love it. Thank you for allowing us to meet your wife, Chris. God, that's 46 years this weekend too, as you mentioned earlier. What a blessing. That's
May the
yeah.
Snap.
Yeah. Yep.
1975, man. I'm jealous of Chris because he has hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I got hair like that goes down to the middle of like my back. So yeah, which I've been growing out for the past 3 years.
Wow.
So yeah.
Wow. When I turned 40, my hair started going underground and coming out my nose and my ears and my back. And now, you know, like my hairline's making a beeline for my behind.
So, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Chris, yeah. I want to ask you one more question, and I saw a video clip of this, and I thought it was amazing, and it's a story about you and the Ultimate Warrior, and I think you know the one that I'm talking about right now. Chris and I always have fun with the Ultimate Warrior on our shows and talk about some of his stuff, because we're like, once again, we're a retro show, but this Warrior story is fantastic. Could you share that as our closing question for tonight?
Yeah, he... You know how big that guy was. And
I can imagine.
And he was the Dingo Warrior during your time, right?
Yeah. But he was pretty stiff. He was pretty stiff. And so, you know, we lock up and he backs me in and he throws a punch and he hits me. And I mean, it jarred my kinfolks in China. I mean, he really hit me. And, you know, when Malenko was training us, he said, "Listen, one time is a mistake. Two times demands a response. And I don't care who you're working against." And so anyway, we lock up again. And I said, "Hey, man, you're really, really tight with that punch, really tight with the punch." And he didn't say anything. He was like, you know, anyway, he backs me in again and he hit me again. And it was just as hard. And so, you know, the first opportunity I had, I hit him as hard as I could. I mean, I hit him as hard as I could, and it didn't even faze him. He just, after I hit him, he was like, and then, you know, kept going. So anyway, after the match, I go to the dressing room, and I'm looking for something to hit him with because I know he's going to come in and kill me, you know. So I'm sitting in the chair. I didn't take my boots off, nothing. I'm just sitting in the chair, and I found a steel pipe, and I got it next to my chair, and I'm waiting, you know, because my heart's just about to go out of my chest because I know the guy's going to kill me. And then, you know, the door opened and he came in. He was like, argh! He's looking, and he found me, and he walked over to me, and I'm reaching down to grab it. And he got right in front of me, and he said, "Got a little tight with that punch, partner. Sorry about that." And I went, "No problem."
Oh, I love it. I love it. I thought it was just amazing to hear the first time. It's even better the second one, hearing it right from you live here with us. Well, Chris, this has been such a pleasure. Brother Martin, anything you want to say before we close up here?
Pastor Chris, thank you so much for your time. And this is the thing, is that the one thing that the three of us, we all have in common is we gave our lives to Jesus Christ, and which in my opinion, and I'm sure in the opinion of both of you gentlemen, that's the biggest decision that you can make within your whole life, period. For me, which I'm a former atheist turned youth pastor, God completely did a 180 within my life. The night that I went to youth group for the first time, that I planned on killing myself with pain pills that I stole from my parents. And the thing is that God, he completely transformed my life. He transformed you guys' lives. Now, Pastor, for the wrestling fans out there, because this is for a wrestling audience. Now, if you had a message to give the fans out there when it comes to giving your life to Christ, with that being the most important choice you'll ever make within, I mean, not going on for 3 hours about it, but you know, what would you tell the wrestling fan that's watching that does not believe why they should give their lives to Jesus? I'm sorry, I just had to say it.
No problem. One of my favorite passages of scripture is Jeremiah 18, 1-6, where God told Jeremiah to go to the potter and he would teach him a great lesson. And so he went to the potter's house and he saw him working with a piece of clay on the wheel. And when he got through with the piece of clay, you know, the scripture says it was marred in the hands of the potter. In other words, it had flaws in it. And so the potter squished the clay back together again and put the same piece of clay with all of the faults in it, put it back on the wheel, and he made it into a new vessel. And then God said to Jeremiah, "Cannot I do the same with you as the potter has done with the clay? Or as the clay is in the hands of the potter, so are you in my hands." And that is the story of my life. When I got through with my life, it was full of flaws. It was full of mistakes. And God was able to take me with all of my mistakes and with all of my flaws and all of my faults. He was able to pick me up and put me on the wheel and make me into a new vessel that is still useful. And I don't care what you've done with your life. You know, God can take the biggest piece of junk and make it into a masterpiece.
Amen. So
that's what he did with my life. He took a piece of junk and he made it into something useful. So if you're searching for significance in your life and you're searching for something that you're not finding any other place, that's because there is a vacuum in your heart that can only be filled by God. And so you need to take your life and put it on the wheel and let him make you into a new vessel.
I love it.
Great message. It really is. What a fantastic hour this has been. And it's just been really, you know, life-changing just to talk to you, Chris, and just to hear and just get educated by you on so many things. It's just such a pleasure. I can't thank you enough again for coming on the show, sir.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. And after you sign off, you're still going to be on there, right?
Yes, sir.
I'll get your address. Okay.
Yes, sir. Well, everybody, thank you for watching with us tonight. I know, you know, we taped this in advance, so it is probably about 5 days after that we taped it, but I hope everybody's doing well out there. I know it's been a rough, you know, year for everybody, but as we always say to close the show, be good to yourselves. Most importantly, be good to one another. Let's be the best people we can be. Let's be the best people that we can be to help others when they are in need. And let's just live our lives in the best ways that we can. And the lessons learned tonight are things that are applicable to all of us. And I really hope that you listen to the wise words of Pastor Chris. And we really hope you enjoyed the show tonight, as always. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us tonight. Make sure you like and follow the show. It's always important. We're doing a lot of great content all throughout the week. So we really appreciate everybody out there, all your support. So until the next time, for Pastor Chris, Brother Martin, and myself, we're signing off here. Thank you for watching Wrestling with Reality. And we will be back again in just a couple days. So until then, be good, everybody. And thank you for watching.